Hello and welcome to Sustainable Warwickshire, a podcast talking about all things related to climate change and sustainability across the county of Warwickshire.
Hi everyone, I'm Steve Smith, Director at Warwickshire County Council. I lead the council's programme of tackling and adapting to climate change and to deliver our commitments to be a council that has net zero carbon emissions by 2030 and a county that is seeking to be net zero by 2050. I'm delighted to be the host of this new podcast series called Sustainable Warwickshire. We hope that you'll find our conversations about what is being done to fight climate change and support biodiversity in our brilliant county to be informative and interesting, at least. And we'll always try to give you some ideas on how you can get involved too. So if we manage to inspire you into action, then that's a bonus. In our first episode, we're going to be talking about biodiversity, why it is important, what is being done to support it, and what you can do to play your part. I'm joined by two colleagues from the Warwickshire Country Parks team, James Taylor and Ben Coleman. James, tell me about your role.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone. Well, my name's James, as you said. I'm a countryside ranger specialising in woodlands. I'm based at Kingsbury Water Park, which is in the north of the county. But I work around other sites and parks that we've got as and when needed within my specialist area. I regularly spend my days leading the management of practical habitat works to support biodiversity. And I also like to increase the understanding and appreciation of woodland ecology amongst visitors and our other park users.
Thanks, James. Ben, what about you?
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be here. Yes, I am similar to James. I am the Habitat Specialist Ranger for grasslands across the Warwickshire Country Parks portfolio. But I'm based down in South Warwickshire at Wrighton Pools Country Park. Day-to-day job is similar to James's in some respects. We still have some of our original rangering jobs to do, things such as keeping our visitors that come to us happy. We keep the cleanliness of the sites to a good standard. We undertake practical habitat management work when necessary. And of course, my specialism now is looking at grasslands particularly. So I oversee all of our practical habitat management of grasslands across the Country Parks portfolio, mainly focusing at Wrighton Pools, but now seeking to spread my wings a little bit more and to take in some of the other country parks as well.
Thanks, Ben. And to you, James, too. Ben, working at Wrighton Pools, I think that's just outside Leamington, isn't it, on the road out from Leamington to the north there. Is it busy there? Do you get a lot of visitors?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's very busy, especially in the summer months. We have over 200,000 visitors a year to the site, so that's a big part of the role that we undertake, is looking after those and ensuring that everybody comes and has a good time with us. And also seeking to educate as well. So people that come, we try and educate to the value of the biodiversity that we have on our site and ensuring that everybody has a very pleasant time while they're with us. So, yeah, it certainly keeps us busy.
Brilliant. Thanks. So we're here to talk about biodiversity. Let's start with the basics. What is it? We hear the word used a lot. And there was quite a bit in the media at the end of 2022 during the UN Biodiversity Conference held in Canada. But what do we mean when we talk about biodiversity? James, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So biodiversity is short for biological diversity. So that gives us a bit more of an idea on what we're talking about. So biodiversity is all the different kinds of life you will find in one area. This can be the variety of animals, plants, fungi, and even microorganisms like bacteria that make up the natural world. Each of these species and organisms work together to create ecosystems which maintain the balance and support life. So, for instance, grasslands and woodlands that myself and Ben are involved in are both ecosystems. You'll often hear as well talk about species richness. And that's also important because it's the measure of species diversity. So it's the number or list of species inhabiting a given area or habitat. So the better the species numbers, the better the biodiversity within that area.
Super. And Ben, why does it matter?
Well, I think for many of us, Steve, biodiversity and the natural world around us carries with it sort of an inherent intrinsic value. It's important for what it is on its own, as it were. And there's many people that are involved, aren't there, in looking after different particular groups of animals because people care for them and value them on their own. But as we're well aware, all of the resources that we have on our planet are finite. And I think we're beginning to realise increasingly so that this is the case. And for many, many years, the natural resources have been plundered by mankind, haven't they? Let's be honest about it. To the point now where we've come to a juncture where we're on the verge, I think, perhaps, of the ecosystems becoming so degraded and so damaged that they may not be able to recover their biodiversity as easily as they once did. We're well aware, aren't we, from pictures that we see on the news increasingly in regularity of polluted, depleted, overfished, overheated oceans, of forests being cleared at increasing rates. We've learned, haven't we, in the last year that the Amazon rainforest has now become a net contributor to carbon emissions rather than the green lungs of the planet that it used to be many years ago. We've polluted our water sources, and as a result, biodiversity has taken a big hit. In terms of the global picture, the World Wildlife Fund suggests that 69% of our global biodiversity is in decline since 1970. There's now a million species threatened with extinction, which is the highest number in human history. We may be aware as well on a more local scale from the UK perspective that the Natural History Museum produced a report about 3 years ago and created their own metric for measuring biodiversity. They called it the BII, that is the Biodiversity Intactness Index. And that is representative of the proportion of biodiversity that we have retained or lost in terms of the historical context. And it's a sad news story for Britain, I'm afraid, because we have a score which is very, very low. We are in the bottom 10% globally of our biodiversity being intact in the UK. I think we're 12th globally. We are one of the most nature depleted countries now in the entirety of Western Europe. And that has a knock-on effect, doesn't it, for us? Because what we perhaps don't recognise or don't think about is the fact that biodiversity and climate change are actually intrinsically interlinked. People tend to see them as unique features that we need to tackle on their own, but actually they are connected. If we have a very biodiverse community, a community of animals and creatures and plants that is interacting properly, that is doing all the things that it should do to function correctly, then it has very, very good functionality and it works well in helping to buffer climate change. Also, we find that biodiverse communities are also more resilient to climate change. So as things warm up and the climate changes, then the biodiversity is more protected. It's a cyclical situation between the two. Just a few stats from the UK. The UK has approximately 70,000 species in it. And the latest report suggests that we have lost 50% of our biodiversity in the UK since the 1970s. That is quite a shocking statistic, I think. And of that which is left, there is 15% of those species threatened with extinction. And some of our very well-known species, our iconic species in the UK, are really in trouble. Many of us may see hedgehogs in our back garden, or maybe not these days. The hedgehog population has declined by 95% since the 1930s, since the Second World War. 95%, that is absolutely shocking, because the things that they rely on are being removed from the countryside around us. 20% of our pollinators are also showing strong declines in the latest studies. And something which is particularly close to my heart, I am a sort of amateur entomologist, that's somebody who looks at insects, and my particular interest is butterflies and moths. And the moths in this country have undergone a 33% decline in just 40 years. There is something going seriously wrong, isn't there? And this is really important for us to consider and to look at and to try and tackle as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And all that data that you've just shared with us, Ben, it really is a sobering thought in terms of the decline that you've both described particularly. And I know there's a lot of activity wanting to be done and needing to be done in the UK in particular and the wider world around protecting our biodiversity. It really is an important subject. But James, you know, just to come back to its impact, particularly, you know, what impact does declining biodiversity have on us as people, as human beings?
Yeah, you're right there, Steve. Yeah, it has a very considerable impact on our lives. We rely on nature to provide us with the things that we need to live. So, for example, food, clean water, energy, all important. Having a diversity of animal and plant species also prevents flooding and other extreme weather events too. And we've noticed an increase in our global temperatures, so there's been an impact there. So really, biodiversity is essential for the processes that support life on Earth, including humans, including ourselves. There are also the less tangible benefits of biodiversity and nature in general. Being part of a natural world does wonders for our mental and physical health. Access, for instance, to green parks and natural space and natural areas are really important.
I couldn't agree more, and particularly the well-being part that you talk about. Us being lucky enough to be able to enjoy our open spaces, access to green space in particular, country parks in Warwickshire, these really important spaces, and gives access for all wherever you are in Warwickshire. Absolutely. But Ben, do tell me, in terms of biodiversity in Warwickshire in particular, what are the challenges that we're facing in our localities?
Well, I think, Steve, that it probably echoes many of the problems that the UK in general faces. One of the big issues is a lack of space on our relatively small islands for biodiversity these days. I think I'm right in saying that approximately 70% of Warwickshire's land area is agricultural land. And that sort of reflects roughly the UK average, which is about 72% of our land is used for agriculture. And if we think about how that's changed over the years, agricultural intensification, sadly, has pushed out many of the species that used to call those areas home. The increased use of fertilizers, of pesticides, the change in the way that agriculture operates has left, sadly, little space for much of the wildlife that used to thrive in these areas. One particular interesting fact is to do with hay meadows, which was a traditional farming technique in which grasslands were allowed to grow for the majority of the season. And they were harvested then for hay, usually around late July or August time. And they had one cut a year, and that was taken away and used for hay. These days, we see very little of that old practice in use, and there's around 97% of our hay meadows, which were around in the 1940s at the time of the end of the Second World War, 97% of those have gone. And if you think about that, that along with that comes all of the species that are associated with that particular habitat. So 97% of that habitat's gone, and so of the species that used to call that home. And that is a massive problem. And I think perhaps one of the ways we could help is working with farmers. And I know there are projects already afoot to this end to try and bring back nature to the farming landscape. But if you think about the remnants of our landscape in Warwickshire, other than the farmland that's here, much of it is built on, isn't it? We have built structures and built land as well. So that leaves very little space then, doesn't it, for us to work with biodiversity, to give it space to thrive. We're well aware of climate change being a major factor as well, impacting on our biodiversity. We're well aware, aren't we, most of us, I'm sure, of the very, very hot summer that we've just had, the incredibly high temperatures that got to over 40 degrees across the UK, unprecedented, something that I never thought that I'd see in my lifetime. And that is going to have an impact, a knock-on impact in the years to come on our biodiversity. The big drought of 1976. There were some species after that drought which didn't recover for a decade. Further to the changing climate, there are species now which are turning up on our shores which we've never seen before, known as invasive species that aren't native to the UK. And quite a lot of these can competitively outcompete many of our native species and push them out of areas where they once thrived. And this is a serious problem and something which we're actively looking at dealing with in our country parks at the moment. There's also, as James will be well aware, there are a number of diseases now in the natural world that are coming to the fore. Think of avian flu, which has had a big impact recently on our bird populations. James will be well aware, more so than me, probably of the impact of the tree diseases such as ash dieback. If we lose our ash trees from the countryside, we're in big trouble because there are over 1,000 species that will use ash in some way in its life cycle. 44 species that are what we know as obligate ash feeders, that they can only use ash to survive. So if we lose ash, we lose 44 species that are associated with it. There are 62 other species that are highly favour ash in terms of habitat. So we could lose, if we lose all our ash trees to this disease, we could lose 108 species just like that at one stroke, which is a terrible, terrible thing. So there are many threats, and hopefully we can try and mitigate some of those. But climate change is going to be the big one, I think.
Thanks, Ben. And it does spark lots of ideas, lots greater need for lots of different types of projects here, given the diversity of the species that we're talking about, the flora and fauna that we have, the different impacts that you've described, that you've both described because of both climate change and its impact on biodiversity. It also strikes me as well, the balance that is a difficult one to strike between, you know, the need for development, building new homes, building new places for jobs and in employment, infrastructure, roads, rail, etc., all things that are needed, you know, for economic prosperity. But how do we make sure that we bring back those habitats, those green spaces at the same time? There needs to be a great balance to be struck, and it's as relevant in Warwickshire as it is anywhere else in the UK. Lots of projects are going to be needed and lots to be rolled out. If we just focus on project work for the moment, starting with you, James, you probably come across a number of projects, you know, at Kingsbury. Can you just sort of expand on some of the work that you're involved in and some of the projects that you really are passionate about?
So over the years, I think I worked out earlier, I've been working in Warwickshire's country parks for 16 years, which is an interesting one. So I've seen a lot of different projects. I've seen the parks evolve. I've seen the UK change. There's been a lot of different things. And at the moment, I think the key project that has interested me and I felt really passionate about and I felt has improved biodiversity is the creation of a new native woodland at Kingsbury Water Park. And I'm very passionate about this because not only does it help with biodiversity, but it also gets the local community involved and the local schools involved as well. So I think as well as looking at the habitats and the conservation work that we do, it's educating users, park users, school children and things like that. So the creation of a new woodland at Kingsbury is something I'm very passionate about. And to go into further detail with that, it's even better because a lot of the funding that was sourced for this woodland was established and supported by our waste management company that extract the waste from our park. So any park users that put their waste in the bins, it gets sent off, and the company that do that are supported us with this project. So it's seen at the moment the planting of 180 native tree species, so things like species like silver birch, field maple, wild cherry, beech, good diverse amount of species there. And like I said, we get school children, members of the public involved in planting these. They feel part of the project. as well. So it's really good. It's a really good commitment, and it's an area of the park that we found that I noticed that was a very poor scrubland area that needed an improvement in biodiversity there. So it was a really good area to use. And there was various objectives for carrying out this project. First of all, as we know, planting trees is a big thing on the news at the moment. It offsets our carbon footprint within country parks. The next steps, I hope, to produce on this, I think we're going to slow the planting down, because a lot of the time people plant a lot of trees, but they don't always remember the aftercare that's needed with these woodlands. So it, as well as planting so many trees, it's managing and maintaining these trees afterwards and improving this. And it could be a variety of things there. It could be monitoring any squirrel damage or mammal damage to the trees. It could be weather, if there's high winds, things like that, or flooding. We've got to sort of maintain the trees there and make sure they're developing a healthy way, really, and it establishes. So it's a very good project. It's an ongoing project that'll far last longer than myself, and it's all helped with funding and support from our waste management company, and also from volunteers as well. So it gets a lot of different people involved, and it's all good.
Brilliant, and it does give you a good feeling, doesn't it? Thinking that you're creating something that's going to last hundreds of years and be a legacy for generations to come. Superb. Thanks, James.
For stories, news and information on what Warwickshire is doing to reduce carbon emissions and increase biodiversity across our fantastic county, as well as ideas and inspiration on how you can get involved, visit warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk.
Ben, you must have a number of projects you could draw upon too.
Yeah, we've certainly got plenty going on at Wrighton Pools. But the one I think that I'm most passionate about is certainly being the Grassland Ranger, is our ongoing project with biodiversity offsetting, now known as biodiversity net gain. Back in 2018, we worked alongside colleagues from the ecology department at the council to become one of the first pilot authorities, local authorities in the UK, to trial what was then known as biodiversity offsetting. And the way this works on principle is that if developers are seeking to build on land anywhere, if, for example, they're building on a meadow, what was formerly a meadow, they now legally have to offset that destruction to that habitat. And the way they do that is they can either make reparation themselves by replacing that habitat elsewhere and creating a new meadow themselves, or alternatively, there is a metric set up by which they can pay a compensatory amount into the relevant planning authority, which is ourselves at Warwickshire County Council. And this money comes into a pot, which the ecology team then look at sort of sites which are suitable. And that money is then a portion for the recreation of that particular habitat at a particular site. And we started on this project back in 2018 at Wrighton Pools to improve one of our meadows and to recreate 17 acres of traditional hay meadow, that habitat that I mentioned earlier that we've lost 97% of. And there's something quite nice about this. It's kind of cyclical in a way, because it ties into the landscape at Wrighton Pools. Historically, back in the 1940s, we were on what was called the Dunsmore Plateau in this area of Warwickshire, which was traditionally hay meadow management. So it was used as hay meadow. Subsequent to that, the site here at Wrighton Pools, a bit of a checkered history, it became a quarry for the quarrying of sand and gravel for building in sort of Leamington, Coventry, Warwick and so forth from the 1960s onwards. And then subsequent to that, it was used as a landfill site. So there is a million cubic metres of landfill beneath us here at Wrighton Pools, which was then clay capped and turned into the country park that we have today. And three of those clay capped meadows here on site are now being returned to their former use as Haymeadow. So we're restoring essentially a habitat that has been lost many years ago, and hopefully we can get it up to some sort of quality. And we've, as I said, we've got this one meadow in, we're 5 years in, and we're seeing an absolutely huge change in the abundance in just 5 years of the wildflowers that we've got there. We have notifiable species for Warwickshire that have moved in, so really important plant species that have moved in of their own accord. One which is called grass vetchling, which has got beautiful little pink flowers, has really taken off across the whole of the sward. And we're seeing big increases in some really important plants for insects and for pollinators. And the key thing here is, if we get this correct, if we get the ground level right, if we get the habitat correct as it should be, then everything else will follow on. The insects will begin to increase in numbers. The birds and the mammals that feed on those insects will begin to increase in numbers. The predators higher up the food chain will have plenty of food. They will increase in numbers. So it has knock-on effects for biodiversity. It sort of rolls on and rolls on. The great news is that we've just heard that we've now got two further meadows at Royton Pools into biodiversity net gain. They're going to be managed slightly differently than the one we've got at the moment. So we've engaged with a local grazier who's got a flock of rare breed Hebridean sheep, which are perfect for grazing because they're fairly light. And they are now grazing two of the other meadows in a patchwork fashion as we try and manage for greater invertebrate diversity there as well. And we're looking at continuing with our surveying just to see how things proceed. And the great thing is that these projects are in place for 30 years. They come with a 30-year management strategy. So hopefully I'll be able to see these out. And hopefully by the end of it, we'll have some really, really good biodiverse meadows here at Royton Pools, which we're doing their bit for biodiversity and also hopefully negating climate change. Remember that grassland soils actually hold 30% of carbon in our world, so they're doing their bit as well. We've got 37 acres in at the moment, and now in my position as grassland specialist, we're looking to hopefully spread our wings a little bit with this and take what we've learned from this project elsewhere in the county. So I've been currently engaged with James and other colleagues up in the north of the county at Kingsbury Water Park and other sites, in looking to try and see where there are suitable areas for us to roll out this same procedure on some of the grassland there as well. So hopefully the future is looking rosy for our grassland habitats and hopefully for our grassland biodiversity and our climate in Warwickshire as a result of this ongoing project.
Thanks, James. Thanks, Ben. Some superb projects there. And I would urge listeners to go and visit Kingsbury Water Park and see that new woodland, and also to Royton Pools to see those grassland meadows really growing and taking off and be inspired by what you see there. But of course, for most of us, we don't have that kind of expertise that Ben and James clearly possess, nor the space, nor the funding often to do the same. But James, what do you think Warwickshire residents can do to play their part in supporting biodiversity?
Well, there's a wide variety of opportunities available to Warwickshire residents, which I can give, and I can also provide some good advice as well to them. First of all, and I think Ben will agree with me here, so he can pipe up, but we do say to people, please do not use artificial grass at home or in your gardens. It's unfortunately one of the worst things you can use in regards to biodiversity and in improvement of habitat. So we try and put people off using that as much as we can. Habitats don't have to be big areas like country parks. They could be very small gardens. They can be down to the size of a window box or a hanging basket. So I would advise people, support people to either plant native species in window boxes or hanging baskets. Or let their garden go a bit wild. Stop mowing. So there's a thing called No Mow May. People stop mowing and it'll be surprising and you'll find it quite interesting what you can find, what you can see, what insects you might find in the grass, what little plants might shoot up, things like that. So it's enjoyable as well just to watch the wildlife come to you. And like I said, it doesn't have to be a big area. It can be a small area if you haven't got a very big garden. You also might find birds nesting in you're hanging baskets, which is even better, really. So if, even if you haven't got any bird boxes, they'll improvise. So keep it wild as much as you can, which we tend in this country to tidy our gardens up a lot by collecting all, breaking all our leaves up and manicuring them. But my advice would be to keep it a little bit wild. Keep it wild. Another good one is log piles. So collect some logs, stack them up and leave them to rot down. And you'll be surprised at sort of what wildlife, what insects, what fungi you might find on these logs. And they all pose a good habitat there. And it's good for young children as well to learn. I mean, my young lad is always in the garden with his insect pot and things looking at insects. So it's a great thing to do. And kids love getting out there and getting dirty as long as they don't traipse it all in the house. So that's good, really. Not to forget that you can just come and enjoy our country parks as well. It all helps. It all plays a key role. And the ranger staff like myself and Ben on site that are here to help people, to educate people and be there to support people in anything they want to do, which helps and supports Warwickshire's biodiversity.
Can I just chip in there as well?
Yeah, please.
It's interesting what James was saying and what you were saying, Steve, about people haven't got may not have the area that we have in country parks. But interestingly, in the UK at the moment, there's about 500,000 hectares, or if you're a bit more old school like me, that's about 1.25 million acres of the UK's land area is people's gardens. Mm-hmm. Now, if we think about that in terms of the whole UK context, that is a massive habitat. And if people can do just one thing, one of those things that James has elucidated to us there, that is going to have a massive impact. If you have that spread out across 1.25 million acres of people's gardens, if there's one little bit of space in your garden that you can devote to wildlife, then that can make a real big impact if we scale that up and everybody gets involved. And one other thing I would also say is the way people can get involved is by recording wildlife. There are many different apps now that you can use to record the wildlife that you see, and we would really encourage people to feed that data into the Warwickshire Biological Record Centre so we can keep track locally of what's happening to our species, how they are moving through the landscape, where they're moving to in response to climate change, and therefore we can take preventative action if we need to. We can manage certain areas in different ways in order to try and maintain that biodiversity. And if people are interested in recording particular groups of wildlife, then come to us. I mean, we're more than happy. We've got expertise in the team. We record moths fairly regularly, right, and pulls, butterflies, insects, all sorts of different animals. And if people want to come to us to learn about that, then come to us. The door's open. We hold fairly regular events on sites in our parks, which encourage this for people, that people can book onto, keep an eye out for on social media and on Eventbrite, that people can come to and learn about these different groups. And records are really important in tackling biodiversity loss and climate change. We need to know what we've got, what it's doing, how numbers are doing, and how it's moving through the landscape. So that's really, really important. And I like the mention of No Mow May there, James. My garden's like a jungle.
Well done.
I pass through it, and then the rest of it is just left to go completely wild. And it's amazing the difference, the hum of the insects, if you do that. It really is quite eye-opening.
Brilliant. Thanks, Ben. Sounds like you've got No Mow 2023 in mind, perhaps. And let's just turn our attention to businesses for a moment and what they can do to play a part in the campaign to improve our biodiversity. Ben, have you got some views on that?
Absolutely. There's quite a lot that businesses can do. If businesses have a mandate or a budget, a lot of them have sort of green levy budgets now. If your business or your company has one of those, it's worth investigating how you could use that effectively for biodiversity. It may be that you at your business premises have got some outdoor space, perhaps, that you could introduce perhaps planting for native species for wildlife. It doesn't, again, as we've mentioned before, it doesn't have to be a big space. Small is fine. It's just making some space for our biodiversity, whether you've got space to perhaps sow some wildflower seed, to plant one or two native trees, that can all have an impact. And I will reiterate here that when we say native wildflower seed, we do encourage people to plant native wildflower seed. There are some, in inverted commas, wildflower mixes that aren't thus. They're very, very gaudy, showy mixes of flowers, but they're not native. We need to really emphasise this point, because native species will support our biodiversity here in the UK, and that's really, really important. So yeah, if you have space at your business premises to do so, maybe if you are looking at being particularly inventive, perhaps looking at putting in something like a green roof, which is something that we've done here at Wright and Paul's on one of our bird houses, a large scale bird house that we've done for San Martins has now got a green roof installed. That can be really beneficial to wildlife. You can also perhaps look at getting your employees involved in corporate volunteering days. I know that there's a lot of businesses that have a corporate budget for corporate volunteering days these days. And we have two offers in our country parks at the moment for this. One of them is a simple volunteering day where you can come out, get your employees engaged in doing some practical conservation work across the country parks portfolio. This obviously is practical in nature. It's quite good fun. We have good laugh doing it as well. Recent projects that we've undertaken here at Wright and Paul's include getting an entire team from a legal services department into one of our ponds to do some clearing out in there. There was lots of falling over, lots of getting muddy, lots of laughs, but also more importantly, a lot of really good work undertaken for our biodiversity as well. So that's something that we offer normally through the winter months and into the spring, when most of our practical work is being undertaken. So from roughly September time through to early April, we can offer that. And secondly, we've just developing a new offer, which is has been seen as a well-being day as well. So it has benefits for colleagues. And this involves not only the practical volunteering element as well for part of the day, but also an element of team building as well. And if colleagues would like it, we can cook lunch over a campfire out in the woods as well. So there's ways that employees at businesses can really get involved in making a practical, real difference to the wildlife in Warwickshire by volunteering with us on a corporate day at Warwickshire's country parks. Additionally, perhaps, it may be that companies look at sponsoring a local volunteer or community group who are doing work for biodiversity in the area. I know there's always a lot of small green spaces have got friends of groups that are always looking for funding to be able to deliver things for biodiversity that they can't do themselves. So that's another way perhaps that the businesses can get involved. But I think really it's about thinking outside the box. Is there any small way in which your company could perhaps help in terms of biodiversity? And again, I'm sure James would agree, if there's any companies out there that would, or businesses that would like to get in touch with us for any advice, or would like to come out on a corporate day, then please feel free to get in touch with us. We'd be more than happy to help out in any way that we can.
Thanks, Ben. And to you, James. Lots of information that you've been able to share, both to businesses and to residents, that and how we can get involved and how we might adapt the way we look after our gardens and our business premises as well. So that's superb. And that's it for today's podcast. Thanks to James and to Ben, both hugely knowledgeable colleagues of mine here at Warwickshire County Councils, both hugely passionate about what they do for Warwickshire, but also for the biodiverse nature of our country parks as well and beyond. So thank you both for joining me today. It's been great to meet you both, to hear about the work that's been done in our country parks. And hopefully that's inspired you, the listener, to get involved in your own way and to visit our country parks and to maybe lend a hand in any way you can. That's the end of our first Sustainable Warwickshire podcast. If you'd like to find out more about climate change in Warwickshire, then do visit our website, www.warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk, or to find out more about what's going on at your local country park, visit the web pages countryparks.warwickshire.gov.uk, or find them on social media. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you've enjoyed the conversation and you would like to hear more of the same, then please do subscribe. Our next edition will be out in February. Bye.